Welcome to the Free Man's Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Whitmire. Join us as we explore liberty, truth, and current events from a biblical worldview.
So here's my question. Do you know what a nine line is?
Do I know what a nine line is?
Yeah.
Specifically, no.
Okay.
Man, I feel dumb now.
It's okay. I'm not asking to make you feel that way.
No, I know.
I know it's
not
a popular apparel brand. And when you asked me to come up with something random to talk about,
yeah,
I'm staring at your shirt that says nine line, which is something that's near and dear to my heart.
Okay.
Because a nine line is really a CAS nine line, a close air support nine line. And it's literally just a checklist of nine lines.
Right. Okay.
That everybody on the battle space is familiar with. Not everybody, but everybody that's controlling air assets and like employing ordnance in the battle space is familiar with, so that you can logically go through a like methodical checklist, make sure you hit all the important points and employ ordnance in a safe, effective manner.
Okay.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's the meaning behind that shirt, which is funny because there's it's a Blackhawk on there, or like a Navy 60, maybe Seahawk.
Yeah.
Who don't really do close air support and like conduct nine lines.
I was going to say, like, the nine line, they make everybody think it's got the line.
Yeah. You're like picking somebody up.
Or,
yeah.
You're picking somebody
up.
Yeah. Interesting.
Not accurate. It should be like a cobra and an attack dive, like shooting rockets is what that should be. But
man, I need to find a different
shirt. It's a good apparel company nonetheless. But that's what a nine line is.
Yeah. I like it. They're patriotic.
Yeah.
The other sleeve.
Yep.
Got a big old American flag on it. So yeah. Well, cool. Thanks for joining today.
No problem. I really do
appreciate it. For our listeners' sake, this is my good friend, James Long.
Should I look at the camera?
You can look at the camera, or you don't have to. It's okay. We do that sometimes.
Yeah.
We typically don't. It's perfectly fine. Met you at church, about a year ago? Maybe a little longer?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've coming up, and I'd call it September is going to be our two-year mark at the church. But, you know, there's always that, like, sit in the back, you know, feel your way through 6-month-ish period.
Yeah.
So, probably a year, just over a year.
Yeah, because
we've actually talked.
Right. We may have met right off the bat, but didn't really start hanging out and talking until about a year ago. So,
yeah. Well, I was just a creepy new guy for a while.
Well, you're also the intimidating guy with the amazing mustache. So all of us lesser men were like, man,
yeah,
I don't know how to talk to that guy.
Yeah, I feel a lot of the tropes I think that we're going to talk about here with masculinity.
But yeah, exactly. At least I would hope so.
It's not lost on me. That's partly probably one of the reasons I'm here for this,
this podcast. It is part of it.
Yeah.
It is for sure. That was just some of us who planned these out were like, we should get James to do that one. So... Yeah. Well, I appreciate you doing it.
Of course.
If you don't mind, before we really get into it, just let us know a little bit about yourself, some of your background and such.
Okay. From this area, from Georgia originally, grew up in Houston for a while, back to Georgia, finished high school here, college, got married at a young age, kids at a young age. Okay. 4 years of school, joined the Marine Corps. Did 11 years active duty in the Marine Corps, had 3 kids along the way, was a Cobra pilot, hence our previous conversation about nine lines. So attack helicopter pilot stuff, got out of the Marine Corps, became a fireman.
Yeah.
Hence the mustache.
I was going to say.
And then moved back to Georgia. So that was, all that career was pretty much in California. Mm-hmm. Ended up moving back to Georgia, which is how we met at the branch.
Right.
Transitioned to yet another career. Now still flying helicopters, but in a non-nine line manner, where we're doing medevac. So fly a helicopter ambulance here in North Georgia, picking up patients, taking them to where they need to go.
That's awesome.
So yeah, married, 3 kids, Christian, Marine, fireman.
There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Is that enough?
Yeah, that's perfect. Like, if you don't mind, like, when you do the medical helicopter ambulance thing, like, how often do you actually have to like land on the highway versus just going to a hospital to pick somebody up? Like, is there like a ratio there, or?
It varies from base to base.
Okay.
I mean, there are some hospital based programs or bases where you're based at a hospital, right? So 90% of your flights are hospital.
Okay.
That said, for my base in particular, we're about half and half.
Gotcha.
half of the calls we do are what we call interfacility. So you go picking up a patient from a less capable hospital and transporting them to a fully capable hospital.
Like going from like rural Georgia to like Atlanta or something.
Yeah, like Northeast Georgia, Lumpkin here in Dahlonega.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're having a stroke or a heart attack or you got some severe trauma or you're a kid or you have a burn, there's not nothing they can do for you there, but you're not going to get fixed there.
Right.
You got to go to a higher level of care, which the closest here would be Northeast Georgia and Gainesville or something down in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So to those same examples, even Northeast Georgia and Gainesville, closest trauma level one trauma center. If you're a kid, it's not good for pediatrics. So we're taking you to Atlanta.
Right. Right.
As you know, from here, that's like an hour and a half drive.
Yeah.
So that's
maybe more with traffic.
Yeah. At least. Right. Yeah, and so that's where we come in. We cut that like well over half.
Right.
So get people where they need to go quickly.
Okay.
So that's half of them. And then the other half we call scene calls, which are, as you alluded to, like the landing on the highway. Now, not all of those are landing on highways, although that's always fun to like shut down a highway and be a helicopter on the road and stare at all these cars just so annoyed with you.
Oh, yeah. I've been somebody in the car.
Yeah.
And then I see the helicopter finally get to it. I'm like, oh, man, I should pray for those people.
Yeah. So we do that, but a lot of times it's also just in pre-designated LZs. So whether that's a parking lot, a school football field, an open farmer's field, something like that to meet, they're going to like a rural EMS agency. You know, we these things don't exist in Atlanta.
Right.
I mean, helicopters do, but they're in a different capacity. Mm-hmm. Our industry primarily serves rural areas because they don't have the level of care
that
you do in a city, or it's so far from a higher level of care that a helicopter is required to close that gap quickly.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, so that's what we do.
Thank you for doing that. And thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it. It's fun. Like anything, you can find ways to complain about it. I mean, it hurts waking up at 2 a.m. and flying a helicopter.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a very rewarding job, as you can imagine.
For sure.
Every time you're flying and taking a patient somewhere, I mean, you're literally changing or saving someone's life. So it's as far as job satisfaction or feeling like you're making a difference, it's there. So it's cool.
Yeah, I imagine there's a real fulfillment that comes from something like that.
Yeah,
like you said, it does suck. Like, I can imagine just random hours of the night being paged to jump in a helicopter and do something like that.
Yeah.
Get old on me quick, but I'm so grateful for people like you who do it.
Yeah. So appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. So talking about that, and I think that'll kind of talk a little bit or get a little bit into what we're going to be talking about today. So what are we talking about today?
So we're going to be talking about manhood or manliness or masculinity. You know, all different words kind of describing the same thing that I think we're trying to get to the heart of.
Right.
And that is what defines not just a man, but a good man. Mm-hmm. You know, a man that is worthy of respect and honor and emulation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think why we wanted to do this topic and why we've been like planning it out for a while now is, we had done a previous one on fatherhood, and it just kind of was like, man, if we're talking about fatherhood, we need to really do a deep dive on what it is to be a man.
Yeah.
There's just so much confusion today in our culture and our world about it. Like, there's not a day that goes by that you don't hear something about the LGBTQ alphabet soup of letters community and just the confusion that's there. But just this, even in our education systems and the things I hear kids asking or have to ask, like, it was never a question when I was little, right? When I was a kid. But now there's just kids are being fed so many differing things right now. I just feel like with that kind of relativism and that kind of fluidity with definitions, I think it's pointed and very important for those that know the truth to speak it out in love. And that's what we're going to hope to do today on what masculinity is. So
yeah,
I'm excited for this one.
I would say just to push back a little.
Okay.
For sure we are in kind of mass cultural confusion. I mean, we just ended the month of June, right? Which supposedly is Pride Month.
Right.
That's what I'm told, at least. It shows up in my Apple calendar. And maybe thankfully or not, it's July 1st when we're recording this. We're gone. That's past us. But I would submit that, that confusion has always existed. I mean, we see that throughout the Bible. There's plenty of societies and cultures that had a far different view of masculinity.
Sure.
And family. And just general value system that I think we'll bring out throughout this discussion, right?
Yeah, for sure.
What's different here for us is, you know, we're a country arguably founded on Judeo-Christian values that have kind of been the main thread throughout culture, at least, you know, for the past 200 years in this country. Right. So it's just, that's normal to us, but I don't think that's normal to like human history.
Sure.
So
yeah, I want to agree with that because it can be easy for us to get like tunnel vision in our own time, our own culture. And I think what I was trying to refer to, so thank you for saying, putting a little pushback on there. I was trying to refer to our specific culture time frame.
Yep.
Because like you look back at the Greek culture, it was very fluid.
Oh yeah.
Like, and I think that's what's interesting, and we will get into it at least in one of the episodes that we do, just how the biblical approach to it, the biblical perspective of masculinity really is a, I don't know what metaphor I want to use there, but it's a culture shock to everything else.
Oh yeah.
Right. And it lines up with the reality that God originally created and what he wants for mankind.
Yep.
And so, the goal here that what we're wanting to do is to get back into that thread and speak that thread and proclaim it, if you will.
Yeah.
So for sure.
Yeah. So I think, just to keep going with that, I think for every culture across human history, the biblical godly version of what manhood looks like has always been countercultural.
Right.
To include American culture. The differences there again, just that we have our culture over the last 200 years has been primarily based in a biblical ethic, a biblical worldview. And we're seeing over the last, 60 years 60, now?
70 years.
Yeah. A clear divergence from not just American, traditional American values, but in that same vein, biblical values, right?
For sure.
But that's not, it's not uniquely American. That's very uniquely human.
Yeah.
We've been doing it ever since the fall, you know?
Right.
So, but the clarion call from God is always drawing his people back, drawing men back to himself and to their ultimate purpose.
Yeah. And I think in that is just this really good idea that because it's not uniquely American, we have a universal solution. The biblical truth is the solution to it, regardless if it's an American fix or any other country or any other culture. The solution is still biblical.
Yep.
And I think that's encouraging because we do have a solution.
Yeah.
Right. If God were to have removed his truth, I think mankind would have wiped ourselves out a long time ago.
For sure.
But it's just his common grace to keep us in check, to keep sin in check. And so let's keep being that salt and let's go, no, hold on. This is what manhood is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we're going to stand with it and come what may.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up.
Of course.
One of the things we're going to kind of just segue right out of that into just some of the definitions that are out there. And I think as we discussed this beforehand, you talked about, as we were going over some of these definitions, there are grains of truth in each one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And even in other cultures, like you just talked about, like we see reflections of truth. We see reflections of true masculinity, but they're usually very marred and they're usually just glimmers like a flash in the pan here and gone, but they're there. And that's, again, God's common grace that there could be something. So I did a basic Google definition. What is masculinity into Google, or what is manhood, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came up with the state or period of being a man rather than a child.
Okay.
Doesn't say a lot. Boys in the process of growing to manhood, similar definition, maturity, sexual maturity, adulthood, men, especially those of a country regarded collectively, if I can speak correctly tonight. Germany had lost the best of her young manhood. Qualities traditionally associated with men, such as courage, strength, and sexual potency. We drank to prove our manhood. Again, grains of truth, you know, just this idea of
drinking to prove our manhood.
No, not that part. Grains of truth, like courage, strength, you know, those tend to be things throughout history that's kind of associated with men. And maturity, those types of things. But just, I thought it was interesting how Google just kept trying to throw it back onto sexuality.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes, being a man has to do with the way God made you.
Yeah.
From the beginning. He made them male and female. Mankind is male and female, but man was first, then female.
Yeah. Let me touch on that for a second. But first, the drinking to be a man.
Go for it.
remind me to come back to the man and male and female separate thing.
Okay.
I was making a joke, right? Like, you don't drink to be a man, but it made me think of the picture of Jesus, right? And he asking for the cup to be removed from him, right? Mm. And so actually...
Ooh, that's actually pretty cool.
Right? That's deep.
Yeah, it's really deep.
He had to drink the cup.
Yeah.
To fulfill being the man God, right? The Messiah, the Christ, the Savior. So... Mm. So I joked, but there is some truth there.
There is some truth.
There is still a grain of truth.
Yeah.
So back to male versus female, and are there distinct differences? So we should call that out, right? Because as you alluded to earlier, that seems to be under assault today.
For sure.
And again, I would argue that's not just a today thing. That's we can read it in scripture, and for any, you know, secular listener here, you can read it in history books.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be in the Bible, although there is history in the Bible. Mm-hmm. But there's plenty of cultures across time that have gone through this, and we seem to be, you know, there's nothing new under sun. So here we are again. But I think it's pretty clear that there is a distinction.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a male, a man is someone with an XY chromosome, and that manifests very differently and uniquely as they mature in age. You know, it's like literally written on their DNA from the cellular level on up to... you know, the facial hair, the bigger, denser bones, the more muscle. And I know there will be people that, you know, call out very small men compared to like these large, you know, monstrous, jacked women.
Yeah.
So there is a spectrum, you know, I guess we do have to acknowledge that, you know, and there can be within men with an XY chromosome, you can have, you know, the rocks of the world, like big jacked dudes that are, you know, culturally stereotyped males or the awesome musician with the long hair and a man bun and super effeminate, but like creates phenomenal art, you know?
Right.
Both men on a spectrum within masculinity, and the same thing for females. But there's, despite all that, still very truly two unique sexes, male and female.
Yes. And, you know, I think just on that, you know, the way God did it, he created us to fulfill two different roles, right? There's just, he, and like you were saying, just men, just by and large, and obviously there are variations, especially since the fall, there have been variations. Creation's been groaning, as it says in Romans 8. So there's just been issues since the fall. But men just tend to be bigger, stronger, able to, if you will, work in the field for long, long hours. And it's not that women couldn't, but it's just men were built for that,
mm-hmm.
right? And women built for other tasks throughout history, just in the home with the children, those types of things. And not to get any kind of stereotypes or say that God said that women have to do X, Y, and Z. I'm not trying to get any of that today. But he created two different roles, and then he created male and female to fulfill them. And when we abide by his order, there's a lot more fulfillment and peace that comes, at least I've experienced, and I know so many others have experienced, and you can read tons of books about people experiencing just that fulfillment that comes when you actually fulfill the role that God created you to fulfill.
For sure. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a good point. And
I think we're seeing this, sorry to interrupt. We're starting to see, I think, a bit of the backlash of like the feminist movement or even the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
From men and women are equal regardless and can do all the same things and should do all the same things. And there's literally no difference.
It's not true.
It's not true. But we've made an effort, like a valiant effort, yeah. like societally to make it so.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen a lot of good things come from that. I mean, there has been more women equality that probably should be, and sure. And we'll talk about some of these issues with masculinity and with perversions of the truth mm-hmm. that have unfortunately led to, you know, the subjugation, if you will, of women mm-hmm. or the minimalization of women, the right. over-sexualization of women, etc. But we're starting to see, I think, a lot of women push back on that
mm-hmm.
and they're realizing that this idea that they should just do everything that a man should do, mm-hmm. whatever it is, like join the military, have a career,
right.
go fight. It's just not working out.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's working out culturally, societally. And I think a lot of females are quite frankly, like shedding themselves of these ideas. And mm-hmm. they're actually drawing back towards what you and I would call truth, you know, mm-hmm. and that is that there are distinct gender roles and they feel much more comfortable in a quote unquote stereotypical female role. And mm-hmm. it's like, why is that? Well, I don't know. Maybe because that's the way it's created to be, you know,
we're wired for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Go figure that we would draw back to what we're wired for.
Yeah.
And I think that, you had said something a second ago that I wanted to touch on, but, I lost it, but that's okay. It's okay. But yeah, just the different roles that, God had made for us. That's what it was. When God created mankind there in the garden, in his image, he created them male and female in the image of God. He created them, right? So male and female are made in his image. They have equal value before him.
Mm-hmm.
They are equal under his grace in salvation in Christ. They are equal under the law. And they have equal value. He puts the same value on both. Equal does not mean same.
Correct.
And I heard that from somebody else. I wish I could remember the guy's name. If a listener hears it, please put it in the comments or something, because I just can't remember the guy's name. But equal does not mean same. It is so basic, but that's just the reality.
Yeah.
And when
we wouldn't be having this discussion, right?
If we
thought otherwise, or if people wouldn't listen to it, if they thought otherwise, if it was just the same, what's the point in talking about the distinction between mm-hmm. manhood and femalehood? Whatever the opposite
womanhood.
Of that. Womanhood. Thank you.
Masculinity versus feminine.
Yeah.
Femininity.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's how you say it.
So there's a clear difference. I think, you know, the theologians, I guess, or biblical scholars would call this complementarianism, right? I think that's where I stand on it.
Yeah, me too.
It's exactly what you said, you know, equal in the sight of God and the law and everything else, but distinct roles.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's good.
Yeah.
Like that, when God created it that way, he stepped back and said, this is very good,
mm-hmm.
right? It's interesting because when he created everything, the first time he said something wasn't good was when the man was by himself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper for mm-hmm. him, right? And he puts him to sleep, takes the rib out, and all of many things that could be symbolizing. Either way, she came from the man. And once he brought Eve to him, to Adam, that's when creation was complete.
Right.
That's when it was finished.
Yeah, I mean, that was the culminating event.
Right. That, and it's something my dad likes to say is marriage is the pinnacle of his creation,
mm-hmm.
which I think is why the enemy, and I'm referring to the spiritual enemy mm-hmm. of our souls, has been after marriage since the beginning.
Yeah.
Like even right there at the fall. Yep. Sowing discord between the man and the wife, right? And I think that as we'll get into it, part of being a man is protecting and defending even down to that level,
mm-hmm.
right? So, yeah, I think this is a great, great opening up to getting into this. You know, we talked about the Google definition, and you had brought up just one of the views out there that I think a lot of people do have in their mind of what it comes to masculinity. Something about a certain yellow cartoon character, if you want to talk about that for a second.
Yeah, we were just talking about some of the different tropes, if you will, of what a man is. And honestly, the first one that came to mind is just this cultural idea of man as a bumbling fool,
yeah.
right? And Homer Simpson, I think, epitomizes that.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, he's fat, he's overweight, he drinks beer all the time. If he's not at work, he's at the bar. And if he's not at the bar, he's sitting on his couch watching TV mm-hmm. while chaos ensues around him, right?
Right.
He's just, there's nothing honorable or worthy. I mean, it's funny to watch the show, I guess.
I actually never seen it. I've seen little clips here.
Yeah, I saw it, you know, when I was a kid and I shouldn't have been watching it.
Sure.
So I haven't seen it in forever. but I am to understand it. It's like the longest running cartoon.
Is it really?
Ever, yeah. Oh, I think it's still running.
Oh, wow.
So we should probably look at it. I'm sure there's some things we can get out of there. But regardless, and he's not the only example. You know,
sure.
I remember, again, watching this show as a kid, which I shouldn't have been, which was, the name of the show is blank on me, but you had Al Bundy was the dad.
I don't remember this one. Yeah, sorry.
Gosh. But he was basically a real-life version of Homer Simpson.
Gotcha,
you know?
Okay.
He went to work, he showed up, he put food on the table, and then he sat down on the couch. And that was like the famous scene that happened every episode was he would get home, he would sit down on the couch, kind of belly falling over his belt line, and like reach his hand into his pants. And that was like his staring at the TV, drinking a beer. And that was like his happy spot, you know, which is just pathetic, really, you know?
It's gross.
It's funny to watch, I guess. You know, it's comical. It's making fun of the man. And the only reason those can exist is because there's truth to it, right?
Yeah.
There's plenty of men living their lives that way.
Right.
And you know, artists making these shows are kind of calling it out and mm-hmm. making fun of it.
Right.
Turning it into satire, right? But that's the beauty of satire. So there's some truth and it gets you thinking.
Sure. Yeah.
So that was one trope that like immediately came to mind.
Yeah. And I think like on those types of things, as long as it stays satire and doesn't become an example, it's great because it becomes a means of, you don't want to be this. But like you said, the reason that those things exist is because there is that. It is out there. And it is gross because it's such a deviation from what a man should be,
mm-hmm.
from what God says. And I just think that just if a culture sees the man as a bumbling buffoon idiot who just drinks all the time, you're going to get that.
We're screwed. Yeah. That family's screwed. He's screwed. Society's right. screwed. Yeah, it's a problem. And in fact, I remember I was allowed to watch. I'm an 80s kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this would have been 90s when I was watching The Simpsons. And I think it was allowed in the house at first because it's a cartoon. So my parents just assumed it was okay because it's a cartoon. I mean, at some point we made the leap from Looney Tunes to The Simpsons.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it kind of caught a lot of parents
off guard.
Of my generation off guard, you know? And I distinctly remember her as a kid once she realized the theme of the show and how it was basically just about bashing Homer, the father, the man, the leader of the house, and calling him out as a idiot, making fun of him. She was like, this isn't good.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, you're done watching this. And, you know, that's not who you're called to be, you know? And it makes me think how many kids didn't get that.
Right.
And they just thought it was funny. And that, you know, that was the role model they had was Homer Simpson. Like, my goodness, you know?
Yeah, no, there were several cartoons. My parents did that to us because I was a 90s kid.
Yeah.
And so not too far behind you, but like a lot of the cartoons were changing then. Like I grew up on Looney Tunes because it was safe and it's still hysterical to this day. Like I love that humor, but like as these new cartoons come out, you know, we get into them, but then parents would come along and be like, no. And here's why, because they're making the dad look hopeless and helpless and they're making the kids look smarter than the parents. Mm-hmm. And you know, all that starts just was growing as the norm in our culture that, and even if they weren't trying to make it satire, it was this subtle, I don't think it was on purpose or some conspiracy, but it's just the subtleness of the culture shifting of thinking adults and specifically the man, he just doesn't get it. And so the kids are going to be the smart ones in these TV shows and the dad's going to be an idiot who just can't get anything right. And so I think that's led to the current culture crisis that, and not to say it's not different from other times and cultures like we talked about, just our current culture crisis, I think that fed into it.
Yeah.
And helped build the crisis, because if you as a kid, if your entertainment is telling you all the time your dad's an idiot, you're not going to really look up to him unless you have a great dad who's actually doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Right. Well, I would argue too that, again, there's truth to those cartoon ideas or those TV shows. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to imagine it's those screenwriters are just writing out what they know in real life. You know, they're writing out their childhood or their friend's childhood or, you know, so like that stuff exists. And yeah, so now you're seeing it on TV and popular culture and art. And then you're looking in your own family and it's playing out the same way and you're thinking this is normal, and then it just perpetuates and here we find ourselves with broken families everywhere, men neglecting their responsibilities, women leading the household,
depression and hopelessness. Yeah. I mean, when you veer off of what just the fundamentals of who God's made you to be versus man versus woman, you're going to be in despair. You're going to find that things are pointless. If you can't get the fundamental of who you're supposed to be, the way God created you, everything else is going to be confusion for you.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, again, just so important that we have this discussion and get into, okay, what it isn't, or what is all these definitions we looked at so far, just of what the world is saying out there. And I think, you know, even just this postmodern progressive view of society that just says masculinity is just wrong. It's a cultural construct, it's toxic, and you just get rid of it. And I think we already kind of touched on how there seems to be a shift going away from that mindset, but that mindset of just get rid of it is all just toxic.
Yeah.
It's still there in our academics, in our entertainment, obviously, and it's wrecking havoc in families and in individuals. And so, I think that just all these things. And then you had talked about, you know, that I think those are just some of the culture progressive, maybe liberal ideologies, but even the conservative view, I think, doesn't quite get it, even though there are our grains of truth again.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say that I'm not a philosopher, and there's a lot deeper answer to this. That being like, what is the postmodern view, the progressive view of masculinity, and how they came to those conclusions? But I'm just kind of following off our discussion of the Homer Simpson trope. Mm-hmm. It's not surprising that that was their response. You know, they see these guys that are neglecting responsibility, whether they see that as their responsibility or not. They just see them as somebody who's not a leader, who's not effective, who just cares about drinking, who wants to sit on the couch and watch TV, who doesn't raise his kids. So of course the response would be, what do we need this person for?
Yeah.
Get rid of them. It's toxic. It's destroying the family. It's destroying the house, you know? So it's not surprising that that was the response to that. I think it's also a response to some of the conservative tropes gone wrong. You know, a man is strong, and if he does it too bad, he's abusive, right? Mm-hmm. If a man can be a leader, but if he does it poorly, he's domineering and controlling.
Right. If he's like if the leadership becomes like what Jesus talked about, you've heard that of the Gentiles, that they lord it over. There's an authority lord it over. If leadership becomes a ruling, domineering, lording it over those under you, then the response would be, and I think to a degree, rightly so.
Yeah.
Stop it. Right. I think the problem is as our culture tends to shift so far each way, is you see a problem, they shift as far the other way as possible instead of just correct it.
Yeah.
Like, you see a domineering man, well, speak the truth. His responsibility's here. Don't get rid of him.
Yeah.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of idea. And I think that's...
But that's the postmodern view.
Yeah.
Is that a man who's living out his life as a man naturally would is domineering, controlling, over-sexualized, abusive.
Right.
Power hungry. Therefore, they're toxic. Therefore, get rid of them.
Right. Right.
You know? And it's like, if that's your line of thinking, I mean, it's kind of solid, you know?
Yeah.
But to your point, that's only half the story, you know? And we shouldn't look to men or anybody who has perverted what it means to be that thing as the image of what it means to be that thing.
Right. You know?
So a man that is domineering, abusive, power hungry, etc., you know, is not being a true man's, and we don't need to use that poor definition as the definition.
Right. And I think that's part of why we wanted to do this, is because there is a standard.
Yeah.
And let's get to the standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's call out whether it's the domineering, over the top guy who thinks he's doing a good job being the strong leader, but he's actually just crushing his family or crushing those under him. Call that out. Call it the buffoon on the couch, right? There is a standard. And that's the point of all this, is all these things we've talked about so far, these are just some of the ideas that are out there in the world right now that aren't grounded in any kind of sense of absolute truth. Yeah, they might have grains of truth to each part of them, but they're missing it. They're missing the mark. And because of that, confusion is reigning, and chaos is, and brokenness and destruction is everywhere right now. And so I think what we need to do, what we must do, especially as Christians, is we must stand upon what the real standard is. And we'll get into that here in this little series on manhood.
Yeah.
But
I had to on here, the opposite, I guess, of the progressive toxic masculine, all men are bad, all men are toxic, was my lived experience, if you will, of manliness and manhood. And that was being in the Marine Corps, or being a fireman. And so I fall into the stereotypical men are sacrificial, men are servant, men are strong leaders. Men are strong, men are you know, warriors are willing to face dangerous things mm-hmm. to protect others.
Right.
And I would say those are all the conservative side mm-hmm. of the argument. And those are all good things.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth in
those. I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not the whole truth.
Right.
And this is what I'm guilty of is, you know, I just stack those things up and that's my definition. And I just pursue those things to the best of my ability. Hence, you know, I work out and I'm this like big guy and I have a nice mustache, you know, and I try to lead well and I try to articulate and I try to present myself as a force to be respected.
Yeah.
But where that falls off and where that's not good enough is then you lose the tenderheartedness, the meekness, yep. the grace, the mercy, yep. the gentleness. And so
I think there's a reason Western civilization, specifically influenced by Christianity, came up with the idea of a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that he's a weak flop. He's a man.
Mm-hmm.
But he's learned gentleness.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I've heard Jordan Peterson say, something like that. And it's like a man should be dangerous, but be able to control it. And I think there's some good truth to that.
Is yeah.
You should be like, there's that strong sacrificial servant and be able to be the warrior to face the danger for others. Like that's huge. That's something Jesus did, as we'll get into, on our behalf. But for us men who aren't Jesus, we have to control those tendencies to be overbearing and mm-hmm. control our tendencies to not be compassionate and loving, right? It's there's a standard again. There's a standard of what a man should be. And it's, I heard this distinction. We'll probably bring it up again, but it's not that you, I'm gonna say this a little tongue in cheek. It's not that you should strive to be a good man. You should strive to be good at being a man.
Mm-hmm.
Because what God created and said a man was, he said was good. And so if we can strive for learning and being good at that, we'll be a quote unquote good man.
Yeah.
So yeah, good stuff so far. I appreciate just all these different views and all these ideas.
I'll give you, you talk about Jordan Peterson, a man mm-hmm. should be dangerous but have it under control. General Mattis, you know who General Mattis mm-hmm. is? Okay, Jim Mattis.
Mad Dog Mattis.
Yep.
Yep,
Secretary of Offense. No, he was a Secretary of Defense, Marine General.
Yeah.
He had a saying that went something like this. Be polite, be professional, be courteous, but have a plan to kill everyone.
Yeah, I think I've read that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a quote somewhere, him in Iraq talking to Iraqi elders, I think, and if I butcher this, I'm yeah. sorry, Marines. but it's basically, you know, I come in peace, you know, I just want to be friends.
Yeah.
But so help me God, if you, you know, cross me, like I'm going to destroy you with everything that I have, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe better succinctly put was no better friend, no worse enemy, right?
Mm.
So you will have no better friend than me because I'm here to protect, serve, you know, all those things, lead. Yeah. But if you display so much as a iota of evil, you will have no worse enemy than me,
yeah.
you know? So
I like
there's
that.
All truth in there,
yeah.
you know, but it's, and that stuff's this, you know, based on my background, that stuff powers me up, man.
Yeah.
I just want to go punch a hole in a wall,
right,
and
right, right.
hurt things and people. and so, yeah, then it becomes toxic and it's a problem.
But I think that's like having that under control, right?
Right.
You know, Jesus, one of the few things Jesus himself referred to himself as was meek.
Mm-hmm.
Most people think when they hear meek, like weak and gentle, lowly, humble, letting people walk all over you kind of attitude. The word meek there in the Bible, it means controlled power.
Mm-hmm.
No one had more power than Jesus ever. Told Pontius Pilate, you couldn't do the things that you're doing with unless it had been granted to you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? God is in control. Jesus was in control of all of it.
Yeah.
And with that, he told, I think it was Peter when he took his sword out, struck off the high priest servant's ear.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not know that I could ask my father for 10 legions of angels?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had it all, but he was under control. He was there to do the will of the Father, which was save us, bear the penalty of our sin and the wrath of God for that sin, rise from the dead that we might be brought into his kingdom. There is no better friend than Jesus, and there is no worse enemy than Jesus.
Yeah.
He will come with flaming fire and glory to reward those who are his and those that aren't to punish forever. Like, so you talk about that. That's something of Jesus men should emulate. Jesus is that perfect man.
Oh, he's the lion and the lamb. Right?
Exactly.
But he came as the lamb first. He will return as the lion.
Right.
And woe be it upon you.
And he showed himself to be the lion every once in a while.
Yeah.
When somebody oppressed somebody who's weak and couldn't stand up for themselves. He was so quick to defend those people.
Mm-hmm.
The woman caught in adultery, right? Us in our pathetic, weak state of sin. He defended us from sin and death itself. So he had that lion. We mainly saw the lamb. We will see that lion roaring when he returns, the Lion of Judah.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. So we've kind of already talked about this, so this might be a little bit brief, but what manhood isn't?
Yeah.
So manhood is not that toxic idea of the Homer Simpson, right? That is not manhood. That's not the standard.
Yeah.
So we would be right there with a progressive saying, yeah, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Like throw the bum out. But those toxic things, they're toxic because they're, like I think you mentioned a minute ago, they're a perversion of the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who abuse their role, their authority to be the fat glutton on the couch, right?
Yeah.
And so yeah, but that's not manhood. That's not masculinity. That's a perversion. And I think we need to do a better job of calling it out as the perversion.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that also, you know, Genesis 3 talks about the fall. And yeah, manhood isn't the examples we see throughout the Bible of men when they're constantly messing up. We see it first with Adam. I mean, first off, the serpent comes to Eve, and I've been told that there's in the Hebrew, the way it's kind of worded, Adam was like right there. He should have said something. He didn't. And then Eve gives the fruit to him. He partakes. We all bear the consequences now. But even then, when God comes looking for Adam, where are you? You know, he hid because he was ashamed. And God asked him, you know, did you eat of the tree? Adam had such a great opportunity at that moment to go, yep, I did. And God already knew that Eve did. And instead he goes, no, the woman you gave it to me, blames her. And I remember my dad brought this up once. My dad was a preacher for the listeners, and he was preaching on marriage and such. And could you just imagine how betrayed and let down Eve was in that moment?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was responsible. She gave the fruit to him, but Adam's role was to protect her.
Yeah.
He didn't protect her from the serpent. And then he blames her for the situation. And so, yeah, I think that what's amazing is that 2,000, well, there's a little more than that, about 4,000, depending on how you count that. And I don't want to get into that with our listeners. But when Jesus comes, Jesus looks at the Father and goes, Father, yes, my bride did those things, but punish me instead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Adam should have done.
Yeah.
And so Jesus shows himself to be the perfect better Adam because he stands in the gap for his wife. And yeah, so manhood isn't the blaming of the woman and passing responsibility off to others. It's the one who stands up and goes, no, no. Yeah, they did mess up, but I'm taking responsibility for it. Punish me instead.
Yeah.
And
so, yeah, I would say that's, I guess that's my thought on what manhood is. Mm-hmm. It's this weird, crazy duality of all the things you just described, which are true and which have defined men throughout history, which is they shirk their responsibility.
Yeah.
They don't do what they're called to do. They don't fulfill all of the traits mm-hmm. and purpose and direction that they're given. Yeah. They're rebellious. They're lazy. And they are quick to rely on others, especially their spouses, mm-hmm. wives, to take the burdens that they should bear. Mm-hmm. So like that is in a sense manhood. If you think about it, right?
Okay.
It's fallen. That's the fallen version of manhood.
Yeah, right.
And that's what we see throughout history. That is exactly what you just described with Adam. And ever since then, that's been the story of every man who's ever lived.
Yeah.
But that's not God's design. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we're called to do. And so then how do we go about living our lives to fulfill what we're called to do? Mm-hmm. And it's constantly putting aside what we believe and what we want for what God tells us and mm-hmm. what God wants, mm-hmm. you know? And that's incredibly difficult.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think though, like you were just saying, I think that answer is that we look to Christ. Like he did it.
Yeah.
And he looks at us and goes, all right, I'm going to fill you with my Holy Spirit. I'm going to give you the power now. Go do as I have done.
Yep.
We can.
Yeah.
We, outside of Christ, we can't.
Nope.
I mean, God's common grace has allowed amazing things in cultures where people, even who weren't following Christ, emulated behavioral corrections and did better things, and that's good. It helps for human flourishing, and praise God for it. But to genuinely actually fulfill your call as a man, it takes the Holy Spirit. Because in this flesh, until we're made new, this thing's warring against us to do the exact opposite, mm-hmm. to be like all these other passive, shirking responsibility men that we've been talking about this whole time so far.
Yeah.
But Christ gave us an example. Like he actually did it, and we can now go do it now in yeah. him.
Yeah. There's an illustration, a pastor that I don't listen to much anymore.
Yeah.
But he's got some good stuff out there, and I won't mention his name. But anyways, okay. he likes to use the illustration of men as a pickup truck.
Okay.
And what he means by that, or what he describes in his illustration, is that men are meant to carry a load. Mm. Okay. So, they're big, beefy, suspension, have a lot of horsepower, torque, and can pull heavy things. When you have all that and you don't have a load on that you're carrying, it leads to the toxic masculinity, right? It leads to all this aggression and torque and power
yeah.
in the wrong direction, you know, mm-hmm. and you get sideways and it's just not good. And you're not operating in the capacity and function that you were designed to.
Yeah.
So therefore we should, as men, as trucks, you know, yeah. take on a load, take on this burden.
For sure.
And that will like balance us out. It'll allow us to stay under control and in direction and used in a capacity that we were designed for.
Right.
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 But now all analogies fall short, you know, and they kind of break down. So sure. like, I know this is true in my life, is I have a tendency to just keep stacking stuff on, stacking stuff yep. on until, you know, yep. you can't move and the suspension's broken and you blew the tires out, you know, and that's very problematic too.
See, and I think that's where a lot of men, I'm not saying this is you, but I've just heard of just a lot of men when they stack on, I think part of the reason they do that is because they don't see that the wife that God gave them is their helpmeet.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning they're supposed to help with that.
Yeah.
And a lot of men don't let them because they think, oh no, I'm the pickup truck. I have to do it. But God's like, I'm giving you someone to help. She's not supposed to bear it all by any means. And you're not supposed to dump it on her like Adam did.
Yeah.
But she is supposed to help bear that burden with you.
Yeah.
And it becomes lighter and life becomes more bearable.
Right. Yeah. And there's just this constant tension and balance between liberalism and legalism, you know? Yeah. And for anybody listening, I don't mean liberalism as political. I just mean freedom from God, right? Like that is what one side of us is naturally bent towards. You know, that's the pickup truck with no load. That's just, I want to go do my own thing and figure out my own purpose. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what I'm designed to do. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do.
I'm the standard and measure of myself.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Or the legalistic version is, okay, well, I have all these rules and this is my design and this is what I'm supposed to do and I'm just going to keep piling things on and piling things off. And what that really says is, I also don't need God. Or I'm going to take God. The place of God.
Yeah,
because I can control it. I can take the load. I can bear the burden. And that's not true either, because that's just going to break you. Either way is going to break you, you know? And so those are just both versions of taking your eyes, as you mentioned, off of Christ and who the perfecter of our faith is, who's the ultimate man that shows us that delicate, perfect balance.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to keep it on him. We have to keep our eyes fixed on him so that we don't fall into those two camps, you know?
Yeah.
And it's exceedingly difficult.
But
it's our
grace.
Call nonetheless.
Yes, it is our call, and there is grace for it. There's his unmerited favor and his power and his gift of power to enable us if we will but depend on him.
Yeah.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, those who realize I ain't got it.
Yeah.
But Christ does. So I'm going to go pick it up from him, and then I'll do it, but not apart from him.
Right.
Yeah. So that, I think, is a good point for us to kind of, I wanted to ask you, I think we've done a good job talking about what manhood isn't, what masculinity isn't. So what are your thoughts before we get into like what the Bible has to say about it? And if you get into Bible verses, like we kind of already have, if those are obviously you're a Christian, those are going to be building your view of manhood. But what are your thoughts on manhood? Like if you were to try to define it for somebody, and I'm not asking for like a sentence, like you can draw it out however you want to, but if you were to just somebody come up to you and go, tell me what manhood is, tell me how it works.
Yeah.
What would you say?
Well, I would immediately go to non-biblical stuff, right? Okay. I would go to worldly, fleshly, like my typical experience, which is all those things I talked about before, you know, a man is a provider, a man is strong, a man is a leader, a man is sacrificial, a man is a warrior, a man is a scholar. And I think those are all true, but it's just not the whole story. But that's my,
okay, so
that's my answer to what manhood is. And if, you know, that's like day to day when I'm like mentoring my son and like calling manliness out of him, it's those things, you know?
Right.
But as we'll see, as we'll get into, I think more, there's more to the story than just those things. That's not to say those aren't true. I think they're 100% true.
Yeah.
But
I think they're biblical too.
Yeah. But left by themselves, it becomes unbalanced. Mm-hmm. It's not the full picture and isn't the whole story of what manhood is.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, cool. I appreciate that because, as we will get into it, I think most of the things you listed off are very biblical for what a man is and what he's called to.
But here's how it's lived out just real quick in my life. It's like, I know that because God is the provider, the Father is the provider, I as a man and the father of my family am called to be a provider.
Right.
Now, when I met with instances where I feel like I can't provide, my response is not, God, you will provide. It's how can I power up and how can I like take over, put myself in that ultimate provision seat, you know? And on I could go, right? Through leadership, through sacrifice, through strength, all those things. Like that's the cycle that I find myself in like day to day, you know? And
well, I think
that's the Christian walk though, I think. You know?
And I think specifically for men, especially like provider, it's our pride.
Yeah.
It's not that women don't struggle with pride, but I think men are extra susceptible to pride. We want to be the ones to do it because we want to be recognized and respected, which in a way God created us to be that way. We're supposed to be that way. It's like you said, we run amok with it when it goes from having a healthy right desire to have a good name and be respected to pride. I'm not exactly sure where that line is, but it's there.
Well, that's what I'm saying is I fail at, like, I know I'm called to be the image bearer and like show God's provision by being a good provider, but that should point to Jesus and to God. I am too often guilty of forgetting that and saying, wait, you need more. Like I have to get this. I have to provide, I have to take on more. And in so doing, put myself in the place of God, which is wrong.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So
I think like, I just remember like my parents, I grew up large family and we were poor. We were really poor and I didn't realize it. Praise God. That was God's gift. I just didn't know that we were poor other than like, you know, we just didn't have money to do the things we always were asking to do. And it's just like, okay, mom, dad said no. But like, I just remember like my dad had to learn and it took the Lord breaking him to learn that yes, my dad was called to be provider, but he was not the provider and that God would, because he promised he would provide.
Yeah.
And so when it just to see the struggle that my dad went through, I just kind of watched going, I don't want that. But I don't want it, but I still do it. And I think that that's something I wanted to say for our listeners, for anybody who ever hears this. We're talking here about what manhood isn't and what it is. And like you just talked about how often you mess up at it, how often I mess up at it. It's not that we're perfect or we're looking down on all these other people. Yeah, we want to call out evil and wrongdoing and perversions. We're supposed to. But it's not because we've got it perfectly right. We just know there's a better way. And we ourselves are striving for that by the grace of God. And we want to invite others to strive towards that better way by God's grace. Not in their own strength, as we've been talking about, but by God's grace. We're not better than anybody else at this. It's that God saved us and we'd love others to be saved, to come join us in this walk. So, yeah, I think, thank you for sharing your thoughts on manhood. That's, I feel like I'm kind of in the same boat. If I were to like, just try to give a quick little talk on manhood, I'd try to talk about, you know, someone who takes his responsibility, someone who leads and protects and serves, his family and neighbors, you know, and he doesn't love, you know, 1 Corinthians 13, even if you gave your body to be burned, if it wasn't done in love, it's pointless. And I think that's, as you were talking about, I think that's the key to all of it, is if your goal, your heart is, I'm doing this out of love for God because he's called me to this, so he's got a better way. I love him for that. I'm going to seek to obey him in that. And then I love my neighbor I don't want harm to come to them. And I love my family. I want to protect them. I want to provide for them. When our hearts love, it's not going to be perfect, but it guards us. I think it guards us from the extremes of passivity and that liberal, don't need God. I'll just be the run amok buffoon, sleep around, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It protects us from that.
Yeah.
It also protects us from legalism because the love fulfills the law. So it's not, we're not trying to just strive for this self-righteous perfection. It's just, I'm here to love people. And as a man, I get the privilege, the honor of being able to be the leader and the one who's ultimately responsible. And that's heavy, that's weighty. But love for God and love for my family and neighbor is gonna, I think that's the key in all of it that just helps bind that. This, it's the glue that binds what manhood is and what it should be. And I think that's what we see in Jesus. So,
agreed.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more that I could talk about, but I think we're going to get more into that when we get into like what the Bible has to say about it. So, before we get into what the Bible has to say about it, and I'm looking at the time here, I think it's probably going to have to be our next episode when we actually like take the deep dive into the Bible. But before we do that, we had talked about just a couple examples from the Bible of what manhood is. And so, first one, Adam, he was supposed to be perfect. Excuse me. He was perfect, which is my mind can't comprehend a man that's perfect other than Christ.
Yeah.
Even then I can't comprehend him, but Adam originally was, he was perfect the way God made him, but he ended up messing up.
Yep.
So I think the lesson to be learned from Adam is even before he messed up, he worked and he loved his wife. And so I think there's a picture there, an example for us that, okay, there's something that's good. And I think the rest of these, I'll just caveat this before we talk about any of the rest of them, is every one of them messed up except the last one there. But they each had something that reflected Christ and reflected God's goodness. And I think that's what we're going to try to pull out, is just those good things that reflect God, echoes of God and his goodness.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned a couple others after Adam.
Yeah. So we'll just kind of go down the line, I think.
Yeah.
Like bring out some quick traits, and that'll set up, I think, what we'll flesh out in the next podcast we do. But Abraham being the next, right? Adam, then skip a few, but then Abraham, right? The father of the faith. I think the big idea with Abraham is he was called out to the wilderness.
Yeah,
he was called to leave everything he knew, his family, to go follow God, and he followed God and found God in the wilderness, you know? So there's truth there. And just as you mentioned, he screwed up all along the way.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But still got called God's, he got the title of the friend of God.
Yep. And he's the father of our faith. And then, you know, Isaac led to Jacob, who became Israel, and he's called Israel because why? Because he wrestled with God. So,
and prevailed.
and won, albeit with a hitch in his step and a hip out of place or something. But this is actually, when you mentioned Jordan Peterson earlier, I went to, he had a tour that he was doing called We Who Wrestle With God. And it's, you know, based on this idea, you know, that man is called to wrestle with God, you know, and Jacob Israel did it in a physical sense, which is mind blowing.
But it's
also obviously a spiritual sense, you know, to figure out who God is, what he's done in light of that, who am I, what should I do? You know, that's the main question.
Yeah, for sure. That's good.
Israel represents that. Mm-hmm. And then you want to hit Samson?
Yeah. So Samson, he's this guy that God sets apart from birth, right? Like gives him a special calling on his life. And then, you know, he gets into it. Strongest man in the Bible, has a really weak tendency when it comes to women.
Yeah.
And starts disobeying his calling. Mm-hmm. Like there are some parameters and he steps outside those parameters. And what's crazy is God is so gracious to this man. Like he steps outside his parameters and God doesn't just back away immediately. It's not until Samson really messes up and just gives away the secret and gives into this another woman. And that's when God goes, all right, you disobeyed, and he steps away. But then when Samson is blinded by his enemies and as a slave, and they're using him for entertainment, God revisits him and gives him this grace to bring an even greater destruction on mm-hmm. the Lord's enemies. And I think the lesson there is, A, don't be a man who just be on guard against immoral women. But also just, I think the lesson to be learned from him is God is going to give us all a calling. Even if it's just working a 9-to-5 and providing for your family, whatever the calling is, seek to do it the way God wants you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like learn from Samson's mistakes and seek God for strength and depend on God for strength instead of thinking it's your own ability. Because I think that's what Samson did in stepping outside of those parameters is he lulled himself to sleep thinking, oh, God will always be with me. I can do whatever I want. And when he disobeyed that last time, he thought he still had the strength of God, and God wasn't there because
yeah.
he's the one that walked away from God.
Right.
So I think there's a great lesson there.
Sure.
So yeah. I'll let you do the next one there.
Next is David, right? Yeah. King David.
I love David.
So many typologies to take away from mm-hmm. what it is to be a man here. I mean, you start with the fact that he was anointed as king, as the youngest, smallest, like little shepherd boy. Yep. You know, that all the other bigger, stronger brothers were passed over and he was anointed as king. So God calls out the weak. God lifts up the weak. God anoints the weak, right? And then he goes on to slay Goliath, the giant, right?
Yeah.
And not to make too much of that, but you know, from a secular perspective, God would anoint the strong Goliath, giant man. Like that's the definition of man. No, it turns out he picks the shepherd boy who yeah. kills the giant,
yeah.
Who is the like secular kind of stereotype of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on to become a man after God's own heart.
Yeah.
Leads a people to greatness, you know, delivers his people, but again, all along the way, like full of failure, full of mm-hmm. doubt, full of fear, full of sin.
Yep.
And yet God continues to redeem him, restore him, draw him back to himself. So it's an amazing story. And it obviously points yeah. towards, you know, a future king.
Yes. And I think one thing that I love about David is, and this is something we don't see in Christ, David repented.
Mm-hmm.
Christ never had to. But you see that in David. He had a repented heart, a humble heart before God. And I think that's part, not completely, but that's part of why God said he's a man after my own heart. Because yeah, mm-hmm. he sinned, messed up, but he repented.
Yeah.
And he acknowledged it.
Yep.
So yeah, I think I love David so much. And then I put here King Josiah. I'm not going to go too much into him, but I love that whole account of King Josiah. He's the son of a very wicked king.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in, he hears the law. He's like 18, I think, when he becomes king. So very young. He hears the law read to him and it breaks his heart. And it says he gets up and he rips his clothes. Like he's just torn apart inside of how far his country, his nation had gone from God.
Yeah.
Repents. God's about ready to destroy the nation altogether. But because Josiah repents, like truly, genuinely does, God goes, all right, I'm going to wait because this man has turned to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then Josiah then goes and he just cleans house. He sets everything in order, gets rid of all the paganism, turns the people back to God. It's just this incredible revival that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
I just, it's encouraging because God's in the business of that when we humble ourselves, and we could use a bit of a revival and humbling.
Yeah, for sure.
Before God has to step in and actual punish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, Josiah's great.
That's a good story. And Jonah, you know, no king, but a prophet. And mm-hmm. so I guess the idea here is that God calls all men to go out and preach the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of what he called Jonah to do, to go to Nineveh.
Yep.
And what does Jonah do? He says, no, I'm going as far away as I can to Tarshish,
yep.
you know, ends up getting thrown into the sea, the belly of a fish, whale yeah, for, fish, for yeah. 3 days. and then after all of that, decides, you know what? I should do what God's telling me to do.
Yeah.
And then he goes and does it. And the Lord, through his grace and mercy, draw a whole people back to himself.
Yeah.
Because why? Because this one man did what he was supposed to do. And he yeah. listened to God.
Right.
So, but to get to that point was just this path of rebellion and mm-hmm. running from God, you know? And I think every man can relate to that to some degree.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'll never forget. I don't know if you were at church at the time, but we had another gentleman who was lead pastor. He's now left on great terms to go plant or help. I don't think he planted, but he helped go do another church.
Yeah.
And right before they left, before he even I think he knew he was going to leave, he was preaching through the book of Jonah.
Mm.
And I remember the Lord convicted me so heavy because he looked at us and he was like, look, is there something in your life that you know God's called you to do, but you're just being disobedient? And I didn't even get halfway through my prayer because I was like, well, Lord, is there? And instantly my mind was flooded with exactly what something mm-hmm. God had told me. I knew God was telling me to do.
Yeah.
And the Lord was like, you're not being obedient. And I was like,
right.
And then he left because God was calling him somewhere else. So
yeah.
I think it's a great book of the Bible for people to read and evaluate. Am I being like Jonah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I am, I don't want to end up in the belly of the fish.
Yeah.
So why don't I repent before I get to that point and go do what God called me to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, one of the last ones here, and we've already touched on it, so won't go too much into it because we could spend eternity talking about this sure. one. Jesus Christ, the God man.
Mm-hmm.
Fully God and fully man, and he was perfect. And yep. he is the epitome and example of just the most masculine manliness you could ever imagine. The perfect picture of lion and lamb,
mm-hmm.
love and tenderness, fierceness and firmness against his enemies and for the truth. And so,
all those other people we talked about point to him, right?
Right.
Like he is the better Adam. He's the better Abraham. Yep. He's the better David. He's the better Jacob. He's the better Jonah. He's the, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll pull truths out of, I think, all those stories of men and what they struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
But it all points to Jesus and what the fulfillment of being a man is.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And there's the last three, you know, Peter, Paul, Timothy, the apostles. They just, and I think it's cool because when you see, when they have an example like Christ and then filled with the Holy Spirit, you see men being obedient. You see men fulfilling the roles that God created them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And just like with Timothy, like stir up that gift that God has given you. And I think that would be a good call here at the end of this first episode here on manhood, masculinity is just stir up, like fan into flames. Like you were saying earlier, like, some of these things just get you going, make you want to just go climb a mountain, like stir it up.
Like, well, I said I wanted to punch a hole through a wall, but climb a mountain's better.
Yeah, you know, I think climb a mountain because I've come close to punching a hole through the wall and it hurts. So yep. I think I'd rather climb a mountain. Yeah. So yeah.
Better metaphor.
Yeah. So anyways, I think this is a good point to go ahead and call it. You know, we talked about what the world thinks manhood is and how grains of truth, but a lot of perversion in it, and then just what it isn't. It's not all those perversions. Mm-hmm. So when people call, hey, we need to get rid of this, no, well, yeah, get rid of that perversion, but don't get rid of masculinity, don't get rid of manhood, because God created it and it's good.
Yeah,
let's get back to the standard and what it is. So yeah. Agreed. Well, I really appreciate you being on here, man. This has been fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for listening, guys. God bless.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the Free Man's Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe for more great episodes coming your way soon. For more information and to sign up for exclusive bonus content, you can visit our website, thefreemanspodcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and God bless y'all.